From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Ancient Aliens. Oh, what a program we have for you tonight. Here's what's happening. AT&T, the largest telecommunications company in the world, wants to serve as a watchdog for all drones in the United States and play a major role in supervising the national airspace. NASA has agreed it's going to work on some kind of program. Security experts say they have discovered secret backdoor software in some Android phones that sends users' personal data right to China. CryptoWire, the security firm that discovered this vulnerability, confirmed this information on its website. The firm wrote that certain Android devices contain pre-installed software that collects and sends personal data, such as texts and geographical location, to an unauthorized third party. Who to turn to? Lauren Weinstein, of course, our resident expert. Lauren, what's this all mean?
One of the stranger stories in this space. This mostly involves very, very cheap smartphones. I mean, these are the kind of disposable, prepaid.
The freebies.
They can be free, $50, $99. They're not the usual kind of smartphones that we have here in the U.S. typically. And what's really odd about this is the company that turns out basically openly did this. They openly put this, a Chinese company called Shanghai ADUPS. They put this firmware into lots and lots of phones that were going out under different names because, you know, this was firmware that was put into lots of different of these level of phones. And their claim is, and it appears to be, you know, backed up by what people have found, is they were just doing this to collect this information so they could figure out what people were doing in terms of spam text and better serve their customers and all the usual kind of thing you hear. The reason people think that they weren't really trying any subterfuge here is that the server that they were feeding all the data to in China was actually registered to the company. They weren't trying to hide it. It wasn't cloaked. So it looks like this is just kind of a cultural disconnect in a way. I mean, you have companies in China that are used to collecting this kind of information inside China, and then they just didn't bother to tell these other companies that they were including the software in these other phones, and now they're saying this firmware wasn't even intended for the U.S. What this really tells us, though, is just that the capability is always there. You know, people don't understand the firmware in their phones. They don't understand the software running in their phones. So the capability of having something deep down in there that you don't know about, that's collecting information that you don't know about, is present. Sometimes things like that are in the terms of service that you get with the phone, in terms of customer support features, but who reads the terms of service? And even if you do, if you're not a lawyer, you're not going to understand it probably.
That's right.
So as we've discussed many times, this is a case in which the technology has gotten so complicated that the ordinary people, and often techies, can't really keep track of all of this.
All right, Lauren, thanks. The bottom line, get a good cell phone, folks. Ever since Donald Trump was elected president-to-be, a lot of people have been posting wacko stuff on the internet. A 24-year-old man from Ohio has now been charged in federal court after tweeting a threat to assassinate President-elect Donald Trump on election night. Zachary Benson from Fairview Park in Cleveland posted the remark on Twitter a few minutes before the Republican nominee was declared the winner of last week's election. Benson tweeted, "My life goal here is to assassinate Donald Trump. Don't care if I serve infinite sentences. That man deserves to decease existing." Well, I'm glad they got this guy. There's a lot of other sickos out there, by the way, folks. And I got one of the strangest stories. The man dubbed Prediction Professor for accurately calling every presidential election since 1984, including 2016's election, now forecasts the impeachment of President-elect Donald Trump. He said there's a very good chance that Donald Trump would face impeachment. His name is Alan Lichtman. He told this to CNN. He's a political historian who teaches at the American University in Washington. He uses his own system of 13 true or false statements to judge whether the incumbent party will retain the White House. However, when it came to his bold prediction of a Trump impeachment, he said it's based on his instinct. This is a weird story. And according to some research, of course, voters do not believe in the news media. As a matter of fact, they have said that 7 out of 10 do not believe in the news media at all, at all. Now, we've been talking about the Electoral College, and of course, what it is when U.S. citizens go to the polls to elect a president, they are in fact voting for a particular state of electors in every state except Maine and Nebraska. Those are chopped up a little bit. The candidate who wins the most votes in the state receives all of the state's electoral votes except Maine and Nebraska. The number of electors in each state is the sum of the U.S. senators and its congressmen or women. The District of Columbia, by the way, has 3 electoral votes, which is the number of senators and representatives it would have if it was permitted representation in Congress. But they do have the right, when they go and vote 41 days after the popular election, so they've got to cast their ballot for the president and a second one for the vice president, they do have the right in many of the states to change their vote. Even though the popular vote has mandated them, they can change it. For a moment here, I wanted to bring in Howard Bloom. Howard's an expert, of course. He was with us during the entire campaign. Howard, this is a strange story, and I'm wondering if you could put it in perspective for us. Can they actually change things when they go and vote?
It is illegal for 28 of them, it is illegal to change their vote, but they only get a tiny little fine. So here's what's happening. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by close to 1 million votes. As of 3.5 hours ago, that figure was 949,176.
And primarily because of a couple of big states, but
right.
nonetheless, she did it.
This is the Associated Press, and that figure is predicted to increase to between 1 million and 1.5 million by the time the vote counting is over. Donald Trump lost the popular election by close to 1 million votes. But Donald Trump has won the Electoral College by 58 votes. Now, a very important person said on November 6th that, quote, "the Electoral College is a disaster for democracy." That was a tweet from guess who? It was a tweet from Donald Trump. The system, as Donald Trump said, is rigged and crooked. Democrats have won the popular vote in, remember, I'm a Democrat, so I'm biased. But Democrats have won the popular vote in 6 out of the last 7 presidential elections. But Democrats lost the presidency in the Electoral College. Why? Because of the most unpopular provision in the Constitution of the United States. The provision that says the president will be elected by a small elite body of electors. There have been 700 efforts, George, to change that Electoral College provision of the Constitution. That's more than for any other part of the Constitution. And tonight, the dissatisfaction with the Electoral College is greater than ever. There is a petition on change.org asking the men and women in the Electoral College, the electors, to do exactly what you said, to switch their vote from Donald Trump to Hillary Clinton. It asks the electors to respect the popular vote, to respect the will of the majority of the American people. That petition has a whopping 4,335,982 signatures. Now, George, that's 4.3 million is more than the populations of Oklahoma, Connecticut, Iowa, Utah, or Mississippi. So there is a genuine popular revulsion against Donald Trump. It's not paid professional demonstrators hired by George Soros, as Fox TV and a lot of Trump supporters claim. It's citizens who are genuinely horrified that the most un-American candidate in history, a man who, now again, this is my opinion as a Democrat, a man who openly lies, a man who promised us his tax returns and never produced them, a con man who has built over 500 small businessmen out of the money he owed them, a man who right now, this minute, has 75 court cases hanging over his head, including one for
I understand all that, but my
right.
question to you is,
okay.
is it possible that the Electoral College votes can be changed when that
yes.
happens?
Legally, they can be changed. Those who are voting, changing their vote against the laws of their state only have to endure a small fine. And Hillary Clinton's supporters, out of the generosity of their heart, have already volunteered to pay that fine.
So this is not a done deal yet for Donald Trump.
No, on November 19th, the electors are supposed to cast their vote.
December 19th.
I'm sorry, I got the wrong month. But electors who change their votes are called faithless electors. We shall see if any faithless electors actually appear on the scene.
This is an amazing story. Howard, thank you so much. And again, he's a Democrat, folks. Understand that. Authorities are investigating after a family member says one of the stars of the hit reality TV show Deadliest Catch was assaulted over the weekend. Josh Harris took to social media to share that his brother Jake was jumped and severely injured Saturday night. Josh said in a video that his brother was in the intensive care unit after his skull was cracked. Jeez. Okay, in a moment, we're going to be talking about incredible advancements on robotics and what's going on Mars. Sir Charles Schulz III joins us in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, our dear friend Sir Charles Schulz III back with us, author of a couple books called The Living Galaxy, A Fossil Hunter's Guide to Mars. He has worked at Martin Marietta Aerospace for years on weapon systems and computer-based automated test equipment. He wrote, of course, an EMP test software for the Pershing 2 missile system as well. He has worked on the Patriot, Copperhead Tank Killer, and Advanced Attack Helicopter Systems as well. And, of course, always gives us a great perspective of Mars. Here is Sir Charles Schulz III. Hello, my friend. How are you, Charles?
I'm doing great, George, and it's a real pleasure to be back on the show again.
God, I'm looking forward to this. So many things have been going on in the world of space. Did you have a chance, by the way, to see the supermoon over the last couple days?
I certainly did, and even tonight it still looks pretty darn impressive. It's just beautiful.
Oh, my gosh, it really is. It's amazing how the moon can creep closer to the planet, first time in 68 years, and then it starts going away again. But it's the wonders of space, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, the orbit is an ellipse, and so sometimes when it's full, it's farther, and sometimes it's closer, and this happens to be a very close event.
Let's talk about robotics. Let's talk about Mars. What's going on in the field of robotics these days?
Well, you know, a lot of people are aware that things are shifting radically, and not in the way we expected. When people talked about robotics in the future and doing things around your house, many people visualized human-sized robots running around and doing things. And what we see now is a huge growth in small robots, in particular drones. So many developments have occurred in drone technology, and that's one of the most fascinating things to see. And the forms of the drones, everybody can go out to the store right now and pick up drones that have cameras, for instance. In one particular instance, you put a chip in your pocket, and no matter where you go, the drone camera follows your every move and records your video and can even edit it. So you can actually walk around, produce your own self-generated show, for instance, and the drone records it all. Others fold up, fit in your pocket. You pull them out, they pop open, and they fly around, and they follow you as you kayak or climb a cliff or do whatever you want. So a lot of people are familiar with drones in this context, and they're becoming extremely popular and even low cost, some as low as $30 in some cases.
Well, you know, AT&T just got approval from NASA to start monitoring drones. They're going to work on a program to do that. That could be out of control, Charles.
It could. You know, the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, is responsible for taking all the registrations for drones now. And a lot of people aren't aware when you buy a drone, in many circumstances, you have to register it with the FAA, just like an aircraft. It's a cheap process. It's only like $5 to do in most cases. But there are some limitations. If your drone is less than half a pound or the size of a paperclip, or if you only fly it indoors, then you're not going to have to register it. But if you do it under other circumstances, you do have to register with them. And even if you don't register it, you're probably not going to get caught. But if you do, the penalties are extremely stiff. You know, they can be up to $277,000 and/or 3 years in jail. And there's civil and criminal penalties for not registering a drone. So $5 versus that, you know, it's a no-brainer. You register your drone.
I would guess during this Christmas season, Charles, that a lot of these drones are going to be sold as somewhat consumer toys for kids and who knows who.
Well, absolutely. And you know what's really amazing? In years past, people were familiar with radio-controlled planes and cars.
That's
RC
right.
Models. And, you know, a lot of us think of drones as starting there. But previous to that, they've had a long and illustrious history in actually defense and spying and surveillance. But I have to go back even further than that to tell you the actual genesis of drones, 1898, radio-controlled boats, 4 feet long, made by Nikola Tesla and demonstrated at the World's Fair. And those technically would be the first drones. And the way he described it when questioned in 1900 was he considered them using borrowed intelligence. They were remote telefactors. And so he felt that they were the precursors of a race of machines that would do the bidding and the work of mankind. What an amazing viewpoint from 116 years ago.
Who's ahead in robotics these days? China, us, Russia? Who's ahead?
Well, you know, we still have a lot of developments going on in the U.S., and a lot of it is very classified, but amazingly, China has made huge entries into the field of humanoid robotics recently. They're now producing androids and gynoids, you know, male and female robot forms, that can act as secretaries and hosts and hostesses. So we can expect to see a huge drop in the cost of human-like robots over the next 5 years because of China's move to get into the industry in a very big way. But most of the robots produced today are either industrial robots used for manufacturing on automobile lines or drones. And it's amazing to see that we're seeing something like $300 million in drone sales and more
Wow.
in this country just last year. And it's expected to hit the $500 million mark in the next 5 years.
Well, you know, Charles, talking about the humanoid robotics, I'm convinced that in the not-too-distant future, the robotics are going to be so human-like that people are going to literally have robots, this is weird, but as mates in relationships. They're going to take them out. They're going to sit them down at dinner, even though the robots won't eat. They're going to use them for company. I see that happening.
That's already begun happening, and in fact, it's been, in a small way, it's been going on for a number of years, but now we're seeing a point where the developments in artificial intelligence allow quite realistic interaction in many ways, and yet it's still not smart enough. I mean, look at the problems you have just getting decent answers out of some of the programs in your smartphone. And yet, yes, we're seeing a huge growth in that. It's strange to think that one of the big driving forces in humanoid robotics is not in the labor market, but in the companionship market. But just the same, the largest growth in robotics is really happening in drones and small devices, and not even toys. There's so much to talk about there. Soft robots, you know, you talk about humanoid robots, and you know they can't look like and feel like pieces of metal. They have to have at least some realistic aspects to them. And soft robots are really starting to appear in numbers. So instead of metal and plastic hard components, they have robots being made from silicone and other flexible materials. And the robots can be compressed or, in some cases, run over by a car without damage. I don't know if anybody's seen some of the 6- and 8-legged robots that can actually be rolled up in a ball and then you drop them and they unfold and they take off and do their thing. And they're powered by either polymer muscles, which are a sort of a synthetic polymer that contracts just like muscle tissue,
mm-hmm.
or in some cases they have fluid-filled bladders that use either air or oil or water. And so these things move around, they bulk up, and they stretch just like actual muscle tissue, and you can smack them into a wall and it won't damage them. This is a real advance in a lot of ways because they can take tough environments that traditional robotics can't.
Is this good, this advancement toward robotics?
Well, it is. You know, a lot of times we have looked at how over the centuries life has become easier as we've come up with technical advancements. And it doesn't take a lot of intelligence to understand that without farming, we wouldn't have the food supplies we do, and understanding how to do it well made life much easier. And also such things as climate control and clean water. We see each of these things. We easily accept them today because it's the way we've always lived. But in many parts of the world we go, we see people not as fortunate as we are have a much tougher time getting along. Well, robotics is one of the technologies that has long been recognized as potentially being able to make our life really worry-free. And in an ideal society, as many people visualize it, machines would be doing the labor and providing everything we need for us. Now, there are pros and there are cons to that. I mean, we can all imagine a lifestyle where we never had to do anything like paint the house and clean the cat box, but on the other hand, a lot of us understand that it takes adversity to make our character develop.
Exactly. Stay with us, Charles. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in a moment as we talk about drones and robotics. Robotics, drones. We're going to talk a little bit about Mars, too, with Sir Charles Schulz III. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Sir Charles Schulz III with us, of course, robotics. We're going to talk about Mars. We're talking about drones. We're talking about all things science. I love science. Charles, how about you?
You know, it's one of the things that drives my life, the thrill of learning new things, trying things, and then just having fun.
Well, and you're having fun, yeah, you can tell. And by the way, folks, get up to coasttocoastam.com and take a look at a couple of the Mars pictures that Sir Charles sent us. You'll find them up there right next to his name. Amazing things. But back to the drones and robotics, Charles. It's happening faster, but what's driving the speed of the robotics? The computers?
Well,
what's doing it?
Yeah, for one thing, it's economics. AI has grown to the point where they predict that in the next 5 to 10 years, over 100 million people in Asia will be displaced from their jobs because of artificial intelligence software that can replace middle managers and a lot of legal people and jobs that normally are relegated to human thinking. So there's going to be a huge crisis in that respect. On the other hand, the Chinese industrial growth is so huge, they have an insatiable appetite for industrial robots. And they're doing things to show their technology off. Just this last July, they had over 1,000 robots dancing simultaneously, synchronously. And they set the world record with that, the Guinness World Record. That's a crazy-sounding thing, but they're little humanoid android robots that were all dancing at the same time. And they had to do it for at least a minute to set the record, and they've done it. But they've also made the move to replacing waiters and hotel staff by robots in China as well.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, you talk about companions. Well, we've already got humanoid robots doing personal jobs. And they're not just limited to things like the hospitals giving companions to the elderly who need help. But we're now seeing varieties of robots that are very much companions, and they are small robots for the most part, 1 to 3 feet tall. And what they do is they have enough intelligence to chat with you on some simple subjects, and just a lot of times people buy them for their kids. But well, we're going to definitely see a huge development in that field in the next 5 years.
There's one out there now called Jibo, J-I-B-O. I saw a commercial on the internet popped up. And this little critter's amazing. I mean, you talk to him, he connects to your voicemails, to your phone, and you use his name in order to wake him up. But it's just amazing what's happening, Charles.
Well, absolutely. And he was actually sponsored by a crowdfunding group that put the thing together. Now, it is internet connected, and so the intelligence for it, just looking at the original literature, it looks very much like it's sort of a Watson base or a Siri based thing that's done remotely. But yes, it is something that you can actually have a chat with to a certain degree. And like I said, the developments are going to be amazing. This is here with us now, and we're going to see a lot of people buying robots simply to have a conversation with them. A lot of people used to leave the TV on, you know, just for noise. Now you have a device that actually can move, can understand human emotions through facial recognition and emotional recognition, and talk with you.
Let me ask you this. Is it conceivable that one day you'll have a robot that, let's say you talk to it, you go to bed, and it strangles you or kills you when you're sleeping? Is that conceivable?
Well, I don't think that would be a regular function of the software.
Let's hope not, unless somebody puts in a little virus or something.
Well, you've reached a very interesting point. Your article about the cell phone software touches a nerve, you see. At a certain point of complexity in electronics, you have to suspect that everything is contaminated. Everything's got backdoors. Everything's got unintended software or hidden software. So this is something that can be a cause of concern. We have to really, I don't even know where to begin with how you would root out all those sorts of things in the software. I mean, many people are aware of the issues with standard operating systems for Apple or Windows, and they know that third-party operating systems have emerged as a result to give them a buffer of safety. For instance, Linux.
Well, when you look at robotics, you have to suspect the same sort of thing will be developed by third-party software people, particularly hobbyists. They're very creative. So that you'll know with at least a level of security of what's exactly in your robot's software.
Well, this is what's so amazing, though, because one day there's going to be a glitch. And mark my word, Charles, there's going to be a story where, you know, it says, you know, the robot killed his owner in the middle of the night or something like that.
Well, yeah, and we can expect that to happen. I mean, everything you can imagine, at some point it happens. Some people have seen the Russian robot that ran away from the AI Research Institute twice. We're not really sure if that was a publicity stunt or the robot actually did it on its own. But it's an interesting and cautionary thing to think about. And you see, we're not just stuck with plastic and metal and even flexible robots. We now have living cyborgs, cybernetic organisms that are a hybrid of robotic and biological material. Were you aware of that?
Yes. Tell me a little bit more, though.
Well, there is a research group headed by a bioengineer by the name of Kit Parker at Harvard. And he is working on cardiac tissue in the hope of creating artificial hearts from scratch.
Wow.
And so what he did is he engineered the cardiac muscles cells from a rat so that they were light sensitive. And using them, they can be triggered by bursts of light. He made a tiny stingray robot about 2/3 of an inch long. And they generally produce them in batches of about 5. And what they do is when the light shines on them, they swim. Now, this doesn't sound like much, but the little robots live for about a week, and they swim in a special solution that's a nutrient, so that's what keeps the muscle tissue alive. But this is the very first of a number of robots that will have a mixture of biological and mechanical components. We're at the verge of mixing life and non-life in a way that people will eventually be able to buy hybrid cyborg devices. So this is actually a living and existing thing. This is a new technology that's here now.
What is a von Neumann machine?
Well, you know, in the past, we've only seen living organisms capable of making copies of themselves.
All right.
John von Neumann was a mathematical prodigy a few years back in the 40s, and he came up with the idea of a device that would eat sand, be powered by sunlight, and make copies of itself. A von Neumann machine is a self-replicating robot, and we are reaching the point where this is almost possible. We now have the technology to print, to 3D print, not just the parts of a robot, but also the motors, the magnets, the sensors, and the electronics of a robot. This is the first time this has been done. When you have the right software and you have the proper 3D printing technology, you'd end up with a package that actually has the ability to make copies of itself or to make drone robots or worker robots. Now, the applications would be endless. Can you imagine putting these in a landfill and having them eat the waste materials and recycle everything?
Jeez.
We're at the verge of having technology that could literally, you drop a robotic seed, whether it's in a desert or on an asteroid or on the moon, and it grows power plants, habitats, air factories, greenhouses, everything from scratch and with no human intervention. That would be a von Neumann machine, a self-replicating machine.
Doable?
It is doable, and we're probably about 5 to 10 years from some simple demonstrations of it. In fact, Stanford University has created teams of tiny robots, and these guys only weigh 17 grams. They're capable of pulling a car, 6 of them can. When you see that much power in a tiny space, you know that they could be able to do any job, and they're simple enough they could be printed with the existing 3D printing technology from scratch. That means that the electronics, the batteries, and everything could be printed.
That is amazing.
So imagine a machine that creates its own workers.
Those 3D printers amaze me, Sir Charles.
They are amazing. You know, we've got machines now that actually can scan a solid object and produce working tools or copies of things. This is one of the game changers in technology. It's where the end of traditional manufacturing is going to appear. This is the chink in the armor. In the past, you had to have industrial capacity such as milling machines and electroplating machines and semiconductor furnaces. We're now reaching a stage where our technology is complex and subtle enough
that much of what we see of, you know, manufacturing will vanish.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on Mars, and then we'll take some calls with you next hour. You have been, over the years, an expert in looking at these Mars anomalies. Have you come to a conclusion about what all this is?
Yeah, it's very clear that Mars had a decent biosphere just recently, I mean, just a few thousand years ago. And another thing that's very clear is its climate cycles just as ours does. It goes through warmer and cooler phases. We're probably in an ice age on Mars right now, and it's not very clement.
And we're headed for one.
Well, it looks like we could be. There's a lot of difference of opinion in that right now. And, boy, you could start a dozen arguments just by throwing a couple of statements out with that one.
Yeah.
I know you and I have probably both been in them at some point.
True.
I know that I have.
True.
But when we look at Mars, we can see that it definitely was a living planet, and it probably still is. And a lot of these anomalous items are clearly of fossil origin. In my opinion, I think that what strikes me really makes me unhappy is that every time NASA comes up on one of these objects, they have a vested interest and a duty, our tax dollars are paying for this, to analyze those things and find out exactly what they're looking at, and they turn and they run from them every time. I don't get that.
Well, you know, when you say that it had some kind of biosphere, life form, how complicated was that life form?
Well, many NASA scientists believe that it never would have had an opportunity to develop anything more complex than bacteria. But the fact is, we still see water and some of the chemistry of life on the surface today, which means it's been present all along, but its climate varies. I believe, and this can be supported by many of the images and the chemistry and physics I've produced, particularly in the books, that it had an oceanic environment. The atmosphere was probably too thin for much of anything, but a watery covering, an ocean can act as a surrogate atmosphere, and plenty of sea life can exist under those conditions. We already know that many of the organisms on Earth can live in about a tenth of an atmosphere and do so quite successfully. So what would prevent things from living on Mars? All the material, the energy, the solvents, that was all there, and we certainly see plenty of things that look like fossil seashells right now.
What about vegetation? Might it have had that?
Well, it would have to, because life generally depends on a high energy source, and oxygen in our atmosphere is that for us. On Mars, that would have been no different. And recently they released news that said that because of certain oxides of manganese they had found, it clearly indicated that there was much more oxygen in Mars' environment in the past. So there's a clear sign that it certainly would have had something to produce oxygen, and vegetation is the primary culprit in every case.
Do you think that Mars might have had some form of intelligent life on it?
I don't. I do have some things that appear to be fossils of things as complex as perhaps squid, and while we don't see them as rocket scientists, they certainly are smart enough to recognize things in their environment and be quite reactive. I don't believe that any intelligence of any consequence ever existed on Mars native to the planet. So the answer to that would be no.
Were we the lucky ones in the solar system, Charles?
I'd absolutely say so. I would think that looking at our solar system, the Earth just is in the exact right place. And, you know, Venus, it's theorized, had oceans in the distant past, but they probably were boiled away very early on. The sun has been heating up all throughout the history of the solar system. Mars, not enough of a good enough environment for intelligence to develop. Now we still have a few more places in our solar system we could look for life. And the Jovian moons, Europa and Ganymede are excellent places, and Enceladus around Saturn, that actually shows signs of organic molecules. We may have five places in the solar system we can look now for things that might be more complex than microbes.
If we can find other Earth-like planets in other solar systems out there, can one assume that it's going to develop much like planet Earth did, or maybe it already has?
That would be a tricky question, because we really don't know all of the factors involved. But what I would say is that life is going to be prevalent anywhere you've got the right conditions for it. A solvent, like water, for instance,
right.
The right temperature range, something for it to eat, energy, solvent, and building blocks. That's all you need for life. And so we've found a number of planets in other solar systems that are in approximately the right range for liquid water. So we can say that it's quite possible there are a number of planets with life in the universe, absolutely. However, as to whether it would lead to intelligence or not, that's anybody's guess. I do know that the form and function of any living organism is related, and the environment that something lives in is going to determine to a great degree what it looks like and how it acts.
You supplied a few more Martian artifacts type pictures. They are strange, aren't they?
Well, they certainly are. And again, you know, I'll reiterate, NASA was, a couple of meters from these things. They didn't use the laser to analyze their structure. They didn't put the microscope on them. And they didn't take more than 1 to 2 pictures of any of them. If I were in charge of that program, and we're there to find the anomalies, to find the interesting stuff and analyze it, why drive away to look at more rocks? You're right there.
You're right
there.
Analyze
it. It's right in front of you.
Yeah. Strange pictures, strange things there. Something happened on that planet a long time ago, Charles. Do you think there was an explosion?
Well, we know that it's close to the asteroid belt, and there certainly have been a lot of impacts. The planet is covered with craters. As far as one singular explosion, I wouldn't think so. It's a continual bombardment process, although, yeah, they could have had a couple of large hits, just as the Earth has in the past. We've had numerous extinctions based on impacts that we can tell of right now on our planet. And so nothing would prevent that from happening on Mars.
What was the strangest anomaly that you think you found on Mars?
Well, I'll have to say that one of the strangest I've seen is certainly that disk with the hole in it from Sol 1185 from Curiosity. That one, it looks like it has a pipe stem on the side of it. Very, very odd. I have no idea what that might be.
It looks like a piece of broken equipment, though, doesn't it?
Well, in a sense, it might be. I would think it's more likely that some sort of aquatic organism, a piece of a shell or something. But there's something that a lot of people don't think about. We're certain to see oddball organisms in an alien environment that we would not recognize right off the bat.
That's true.
What do you think of when you see a platypus? Who put that thing together? You know? So there's quite the chance that we're going to run into some anomalies on Mars that don't match anything we've ever seen on Earth, and that might be one of them.
All right, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to open up the phone lines as we talk about robotics, drones, and Mars right here on Coast to Coast AM.